In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stevens Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for your coolest conversations podcast in Little Stevens Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. My guest this time around is musician and producer Tommy Henriksen. He plays in the Hollywood Vampires alongside Alice Cooper and Johnny Depp, and he's produced artists as varied as Lady Gaga and Meatloaf. He also co-wrote with Johnny Depp our recent coolest song of the world. This is a song from Miss Hedy Lamarr. It's from the Johnny Depp and Jeff Beck album called 18 that came out last summer. We'll give some of it a listen now, followed by my interview with Tommy Henriksen on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stevens Underground Garage.
This is a song for Miss Hedy Lamarr, erased by the same world that made her a star. Spun out of beauty, trapped by its web, she's a perfect cocoon, entwined in gold thread. Her beauty is spectacle, her thoughts too pure, the light of her being, her exotic allure. Is torn at the seams for daring to dream. It's so hard to speak when you're frozen in. Scream. Yes, it's all what it seems. Feels like a dream. But it's life and it's death. She began and she ended like baby's breath. I don't believe in humans anymore. I don't believe, I can't believe, I won't believe.
You're with the Mighty Manfred here in Little Stevens Underground Garage. And my guest for our coolest conversations is Tommy Henriksen, known for his work as a guitarist and bassist and songwriter of the likes of Alice Cooper and the Hollywood Vampires. He's also a noted producer, and he worked with Jeff Beck and Johnny Depp on their collaboration from this past summer, the album 18, which features our coolest song in the world this week. This is a song from Miss Hedy Lamarr. Hey, Tommy, how are you?
I'm really good. How are you doing, Manfred?
I'm hanging in there. Very happy we got a chance to chat today, too. I was looking stuff up on you, and I found out you're from Long Island, originally, yeah. New York.
I'm originally from Long Island, so it's great to speak to English people whenever I can.
Well, I'm going to touch on what do you mean by that. But I was reading that you had early on like a band with your brother. I think it was called Rough Cut.
Yeah, that's a long time
ago. So what was it like growing up in the Henriksen household? I mean, you and your brother in a band together, were your parents supportive of your, what's it called, your music aspirations?
Not at all, Manfred. We came from a pretty tough environment, me and my whole family. My mother raised five kids on her own, you know what I mean, welfare. And everyone in our neighborhood played music, which was cool. And it's like one of those things, it's like, you look back on it and you go, man, we had it tough, but it was like the best of times at the same time, because I got to grow up and listen to like all the best music, you know, and be inspired by everyone around and a lot of great musicians from my neighborhood too. You know, it was really cool.
So give me an idea about this. So they're five brothers, is that what you said?
Four brothers and a sister. And my mother worked three jobs, you know. I didn't even know we were on welfare until I was in high school and I had a free lunch card. And some kid said to me, he goes, man, you know, those lunch cards for paupers. I was like, what? What are you talking about? It's like, you're on welfare? And I was like, I don't know. And I went home and I asked my mother. I was like, Ma, are we on welfare? She's like, yeah, where have you been? So I had no idea.
So with your mom working three jobs, is it like the older kids are taking care of the younger kids?
No. We all, dude, it was like, we were all like kind of on our own. I mean, it's really weird. Like, you think about it back then, you know, it was kind of like one of those things where we were just, you know, fighting all the time, you know, your brothers and sisters. And then my brother came home, I'll never forget it, with Lou Reed, the live record, Rock and Roll Animal, I think. And I remember hearing Sweet Jane and all that stuff. And then I remember hearing like Bob O'Reilly. And then like my brother would bring home the best records. And then I was like,
which, well, let me interrupt a minute. Which brother is this? How far an age of difference is he from you?
My brother Gene is like 3 years older than me. I'm like the second to youngest. So okay. It'd be my sister Anne-Marie, my brother Eugene or Gene, and then my brother George, then myself, and then my younger brother David. And that's the way it went, like that. And you know, my brother.
Well, which was the brother you played with in the band?
Gene was the drummer. Excuse me.
Okay.
And he always bring home cool stuff. He'd bring home great records all the time, and I'd be like, what is this? He's like, oh, this is The Who. I was like, oh, what is that? He's like, oh, that's David Bowie. I remember when I first heard Diamond Dogs, I was like, dude, that stuff changes your life, you know?
Well, so you're playing with your brother.
I didn't play with him first. Sorry, Manfred. He was playing drums. And yeah. Then what happened was my other brother, George, was playing guitar. And then my mother bought him this Sokova guitar for like $30, I remember. And he said he didn't want to play it because he didn't like it. So then I said to my mother, I was like, can I play it? She's like, well, I'll get you a couple guitar lessons. And if you like it, play it. So she bought me, I forgot, it was like three guitar lessons. And they were like, seriously, $6 an hour back then. And the guy would come to your house. I picked it up. And the first song I learned was Smoke on the Water and like Mississippi Queen. And the Bad Company, Can't Get Enough of Your Love, stuff like that, you know.
So you were playing with your brother.
Yes.
And you alluded to you know, being happy to speak to an English speaker because you're living in Zurich in Switzerland right now.
Yes.
I know that somehow you went from Long Island to being in this heavy metal band, the German heavy metal band, Warlock. Does that tie into you being in Switzerland at all now?
I don't know.
How do you get from Long Island rocking locally to being in a German heavy metal band?
Well, that's another funny story. So we were playing around town and we were playing when Zebra was around, Twisted Sister, Rat Race,
Queer.
I mean, like amazing bands, Mazarin, Vixen. And we were all doing our thing. And what happened was one day I started playing. We were playing somewhere in Queens and some producer guy named Joey Ballin, heard about me because Warlock was in New York recording this record called Triumph and Agony. And they needed a bass player. So he got my number through someone. He called me up. And he said, hey, I want you to come down to the power station and check out the Queen of Heavy Metal. And I was like, Queen, like, what are you talking about? I was like, ah, it's a band called Warlock. And I was like, oh, I remember that band from MTV, Headbangers Ball. And I was like, okay. So I went down to the studio just to check it out. And then Dora was like, I want you in the band. And I was like, you never even heard me play. She's like, I know you're the guy. Tell me you're the guy. And I was like, I got to think about that, you know, because we were doing our own thing. We were doing really well at the time. But I went home and I asked my mother. I said, Ma, I go, what do you think I should do? And I never forget what she said. She's like, Thomas, go see the world. Don't end up like these guys in this neighborhood. Go see the world and go do it. And I did. And that was one of those things where you go and you're making like $225 a week. You know, and everyone, you know, thinks you're on MTV. It was it's pretty funny when you really think about it, Manfred, you know, like all of these steps that lead you up to all of these other things that you don't even know are going to happen, you know? So
when you went down the audition or to check out Warlock, they were looking for a bass player, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But now in at that time, are you playing primarily as a bass player or as a guitar player?
Yeah, I'm originally a bass player. I'm a bass player from day one. I picked up the guitar for a couple of years, and then what happened was there were so many great guitar players in my neighborhood that were far better than me and still are far better than me, but there was no bass players. So, and I was playing, I go to this guy, Bobby Rondinelli's house, because him and his brother Teddy had a band and they were like the best musicians in the neighborhood. And they were incredible. And Bobby said to me, "You should play bass. There's no bass players." So that's when I was like, going, "I don't want to play bass." And then my brother, really funny, he said, "You know, we got a band and we want you to play bass." And I remember crying because I was like, "I don't want to be a bass player." And then my mother said, "Shut up and do what your brother tells you to do." That's how I
now, wait a minute here. It's funny is you were saying that your parents, weren't that supportive necessarily of music aspiration, but mom seems to have a kind of a controlling, a guiding hand here, man. Yeah. I mean, you know, she does give you the, pays for a couple of guitar lessons.
Yeah.
Tells you to go see the world and then, you know, shut up, quit crying and play bass.
Yeah.
I mean,
my father was never around. So it was mother was my father and my mother. She was everything. She was amazing. You know, she was a little Italian woman, didn't take shit from nobody and told exactly the way it was. Never lied. Never, you know, never dishonest, you know, like, it's like, she was a really good woman, man. She really was my mother, you know.
Yeah.
She passed away like in 1991 of lung cancer. So she never got a chance to see any of this stuff turn into fruition. But, you know,
that's too bad. How old were you at the time when she passed away?
See, I'm 58 now. So that's 91. I must have been like 20 something years old, maybe.
Yeah.
It's tough. Yeah. You know, you never get over that stuff. And I still talk to her every day, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, when you went down for this, Warlock called you down. Were you the only English speaker then?
No,
I mean, I'm half German, so I got this sort of thing in my head of them going, "Ja, hello,
exactly.
Welcome."
Manfred, you got it down to the T because none of them spoke English. The other guy that was there was this kid named Tommy Bowen, who was the guitar player from Queens. And he was the guy who told Joey Ballon, "Oh, you got to get Tommy from Rough Cut. He's the guy." And that's how that happened. Tommy Bowen was the one who introduced me to Ballon. And then we didn't even have to audition. I mean, and Ballon was just like, "You got the gig if you want it." And next thing I knew, a couple months later, I was off to Europe and we were on tour with Dio, playing with Dio and Megadeth and doing all these festivals. And it was an eye opener for me because I was like, wow. Because, you know, you're living in New York and coming from Long Island. You never think, number one, you're gonna leave. You know, it's
like,
you never think, you think everyone talks like you. Dude, Manfred, you learn so much about yourself when you travel the world. You go, "Oh my God, I sound like an idiot. There's so many other things out there that I am not aware about that I really need to embrace and listen to the universe and the world." You don't know this stuff, man. It's like, it's hard knocks learning, man. You know what I mean?
You know what, my friend, I want to share something with you is I love New York and the people in New York, some of the greatest people I've ever known and met, but that is the most provincial place I've also been to, right? Yep. And initially when those people were outside of New York, all they're doing is complaining about it, how it's not like New York. And it's like, no, it's not. And some of that is good.
Exactly. You know? You learn that, man. You really do.
So you see the world, you're doing the Warlock thing. I know you were pursuing your own projects through the 90s, but how did you wind up producing and arranging material for all sorts of artists as varied as, well, you know, there's like Lady Gaga and Meatloaf. You've done stuff with Bowling for Soup, Lou Reed. How does all this develop?
I've had like, I don't know, 13 lives. I look at it and it's like, it's unbelievable because you just got to figure out, how do I survive in this world? You know what I mean? Where pretty much morality's dead. And, you know, even back then, what happened was I got back from the Doro tour and I was like on the Warlock. And then it changed into Doro. And I was like, ah. And then I worked with Gene Simmons and on that. And then he fired me. So, and then I went back to New York, and then I'll never forget, I was digging ditches and doing landscaping. And I was just sitting there looking at the sky going, why me, Jesus? What did I do to you? Why do I deserve this? You know, you feel sorry for yourself for a second. Then you go, you know what? Fuck this, man. And I remember looking, going back home, and I go, you know what? I'm moving to LA. I had like $3,000 and a Camaro. And I just drove out to LA with no plan. Like, I'm just going to drive out to LA and I'll figure it out. And I lived in my car for about 6 months. I was working at Kinko's, you know, doing like trying to be an extra, you know, just doing that so I could eat. And then the next guy I met who actually pretty much saved my life was Jeff Pilson from Dokken. He was looking for a bass player, and I met him at the Rainbow one night, and I went down, and it was really funny. That week I auditioned for Ozzy Osbourne, David Lee Roth, and Zach, who's a really good friend of mine. You know, I went down there, played great. He's like, Tomo, you got the gig, but we got one more guy coming. I was like, okay. And then he called me the next day. He's like, Ozzy didn't like your hair. He gave the gig to Mikey Ness. I was like, okay. So then David Lee Roth, same thing. He didn't like my hair either. So I was like, all right. So that Long Island, you know, poodle look with the bangs wasn't helping my cause. So I'll never forget it. The next day, I called up Pilsen, and Pilsen's like, yeah, I need a bass player. So I was like, I'll play bass. And then I moved in with him. He let me live at his place. And then it was funny. We did that for like 3 years. And Jeff really, really, he taught me a lot about life and just like health-wise. Like he was always healthy. He was into yoga. And, you know, turned me on to sushi. You don't know sushi. Like growing up in the fucking late 70s. 80s. I didn't know what fucking sushi was. You know what I mean? Like a good meal to me was going to Sizzler. That was like, or McDonald's. I was like, oh, we're getting a treat today or something, you know? But Jeff, I played with Jeff for like 3 years, and then he went back to go do Dokken. And then I was like, you know what? This was like 93. And I was like, you know what? I remember sitting in front of a light over by Hollywood High School over there somewhere. And I watched all these kids walking out. No one had long hair. And I drove my car to a barbershop, and I told the guys, like, just give me a mohawk. Just cut it all off. And the guy's like, really? Because I was like, eh. So then I said, fuck it. I'm just going to start playing punk rock music again. Because I the other thing, too, I grew up on punk. I loved the Ramones, the Sex Pistols. You know what I mean? And I saw the Ramones in Central Park. At a free concert, like those Pepsi concerts back in the day, like it was like 77, 78, somewhere around that. I remember seeing that and watching Dee Dee Ramone going, and I was like, so you take all of this stuff in. And I started a punk band. And then I got a record deal with Giant Records with that. And what happened was the label went under. And then after that, Pilsen called me up and he said, hey, I need you to come watch my house. I'm going to be on tour with Dokken for like a year. And I was getting ready to be evicted from my apartment in Hollywood. So it was one of these weird things, man, from where all of a sudden I was like,
perfect timing.
I was like, thank you, mom, you know? And so what happened was I go to Jeff's house. I bring my little 12 track and that's all I had because I sold everything. Yeah. And I started writing songs. And then I was like, oh, you know what? What do I want to do now? I was like, you know what? I want to do like Bruce Springsteen, Peter Gabriel. I could do that stuff too. No one knows I could do that. I'm going to concentrate on that stuff. So I just sat in Jeff's house for like 6 months writing songs every day. He came back from tour and he goes, look, play me what you've been doing. And I play him what I'm doing. And he was like, Tommy, man, this is great. You can get a record deal on this. And I was like, you think so? And I didn't realize it because I wasn't thinking about a record deal. I was just thinking about, you know, let me try some songs. So I sent out the tape. And next thing I know, I'm at Gary Gersh's house. And I'm playing acoustic, bringing my acoustic. And he looks at me and says, you're the next international Peter Gabriel, Bruce Springsteen. I want to sign you a record deal. And Manfred at the time, I owed Wells Fargo $11. So I had no money, no nothing. So I went from one day owing the bank $11 to being a millionaire the next. And I was like going, this is fucking insane. Sorry if I'm cursing. So then I get this record deal. Same thing happens. I get signed by Gary Gersh, the president of the label. I make this record with Keith Forsey, who did all the Billy Idol stuff and Psychedelic Furs. And
so about what time is this? What year is this?
This is like 90, like the POL thing went from like 94 to 96 and then it was over. And then this was like 96, 97. I got the deal in like 97, I think. And next thing I know, then I have all this money and then I finish the record. They're going to make the priority of the label. And then Gary Gersh gets fired. So then I'm like, oh, great. And then this new guy comes in, Roy Lott. He was a lawyer. I remember Gary calling me up and saying, you're in trouble. He's like, he's not going to understand what you're making. So I went to this meeting and I'm sitting around with all the A&R guys. And I love when they go, well, you know, we don't know what to define you. We don't, you know, you two, you're Peter Gabriel, but you're not Backstreet Boys of Third Eye Blind. You're like in this middle ground and you need to make a record where it sounds more like Backstreet Boys of Third Eye Blind. And I never forget, my manager at the time was Ron Stone. And I looked at Ron, I was like, can I talk to you outside? And I bring Ron outside and I go, listen, Ron, I go, I don't want to be disrespectful or anything like that, but I ain't going to sit here. I can't listen to this shit, dude. I'm not the Backstreet Boys. Third Eye Blind, I really like, and I like the Backstreet Boys, but I'm none of this, man. I was like, and these guys don't get it. And he looks at me, he goes, you're dead in the water. He goes, let's just tell them we're off. We want out. So we walked in there. I said, listen, I go, that's it. You'll hear from my lawyer. I want out. Next thing I know, funny story too. There's so many stories, dude. I don't want to blow up your show, but you know, so when I got the deal, Gary Gersh said to me, he's like, we got to put new teeth in your mouth.
So put new teeth in your mouth?
Yes.
Like meaning that your teeth weren't in good shape at the time.
Dude, being from New York, it's like London teeth. You know what I mean? You don't really think about teeth. You know what I mean? You go to Hollywood, that's all it is. It's all about teeth, looks, health. You got hair. You know what I mean? So he's like going, I'm like, what is he talking about? So he's like, I want to get your teeth fixed. So they put like $30,000. I met Michael Jackson's guy, you know, and Axl Rose. It's like all of these people. And the guy puts my teeth in. And then when I got out of the deal, I never forget, my lawyer calls me up and he says, I got good news and bad news, Tommy. Bad news is Capital wants the teeth back. Dude, you can't make this up, man. I started laughing. I go, I thought that was non-recoupable. He's like, so did I, but the new guy wants the teeth. So I was like, all right, give him the teeth. So we gave the teeth back. So then after that, I never
forget. Wait a minute. What do you mean you gave him the teeth back?
I gave him the 30 grand back that they won. You know?
Okay. Yeah. Right.
So you got,
I mean, you know, so, they're stuck in there, you know?
And you know what? I got to tell you, my dentist, this guy named Dr. Sherwin Davidson, he was the best guy ever. And these are still the same teeth I've had in my mouth since 1997, which is unbelievable, you know?
Yeah.
And, but anyway, so what happened after that, I went back to my house. And the cool thing about it was, Manfred, like, I went from owning Wells Fargo, $11. I'm a millionaire now. You know, I'm like, I'm over $1 million from a published deal and record deal and all this stuff. So Jeff tells me, go buy a house. So I walk out of his house and I walk down like five houses. And I see a for sale sign and I just knock on the door. And I said to this guy, this English dude, Roger from Nottingham, I said, hey, your house is for sale. He's like, yes, it is. I said, well, I'd like to buy it. He's like, when? I was like, today. He goes, what are you, a drug dealer? I go, no. I got cash and I want to buy it. I was like, how much you want for it? And he's like, well, you got to go through the realtor. And I didn't know that either. You know, I didn't know any of this stuff. Yeah. So, like, long story short, I bought the house and all the property. So I'm at the house now. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to find bands and I'm just going to produce and write. And then I started on a roll where I started getting all of these bands record deals. And next thing I know, I get a call from Sylvia Rhone at Electra going, Tommy, I want you to have your own label here. But then Jimmy Iovine's calling me up to, hey, Tommy, man, let's get you in over here, man. We'll give you your own label. So next thing I know, I got my own label deal with Interscope. And so then I'm doing all of these bands. I'm producing. And Jimmy calls me. He's like, I just signed this girl like Lady Gaga. I want you to work with her. And I was like, okay. And I'll never forget it, dude. First time she showed up at my house, I swear to God, she looked like she was ready to go on stage. And I looked at her. I went, man, you come prepared. And she was great. She, like, I knew something was there. Like, I was like going, but I didn't, I knew something was there because I was like, because I was finding all of these bands and getting all these bands record deals. So I was like a talent scout, and I'd be developing these kids and artists. And Jimmy was like, I want you to work with it and all these other things. So, and we worked, we did, you know, like five songs, and, you know, and then I guess, you know, Red One came in, and probably the chemistry was better, or Red One probably just knew how to work the system better than me, because I'm not like a system guy, you know. I just tell it like it is. And, you know, a lot of people don't.
Well, yeah, you got your mom in you.
You know, a lot of people don't like to hear the truth. You know what I mean?
And
I'm always like,
well, especially in California, I guess, especially in L.A.
Exactly. You know, and then you got people double dipping. You know what I mean? Like, you're going, isn't this illegal what this guy's doing? It was like so many things that I said to Jimmy Iovine that I could have been working for Beats right now if I would have played it right. Trust me. But I didn't.
Well, how did you wind up with meeting Johnny Depp, and then winding up in the Hollywood Vampires? Okay.
So I did all those things like that. And then it was really funny. So when I moved to Nashville, I got divorced, and my marriage fell apart, and it just wasn't working out. And I was like, you know what? This is 2009. And I got divorced like 2007. And I was like going, you know what? I need to get out of LA. I need to go somewhere else. And I was like, I donated everything in my house to the battered woman shelter of LA. And I had like, and you know, I was just like, I just wanted to get out. Let's get a fresh start. I packed up the U-Haul truck with the studio, and I took my engineer with me, this kid, Justin. And we just drove into Berry Hill, same kind of like I did to LA, drove into Berry. Uh-huh. I looked around, I saw a for rent sign, called up. I was like, this is where we're going to set the studio up. It's right across from Blackbird. And we set it up. And I'm working there for about 2 weeks, and I get a phone call from Bob Ezrin. And Bob Ezrin calls me up, and he's like, hey, Tommy Henriksen, you did this band that I really love, and I want to talk to you about it. And I was like, okay. So I start talking to Bob about it. And then Bob says, I want you to work on a couple things for me. And I was like, okay, what do you got in mind? He's like, I'll send it to you. So this is a funny story too, Manfred. So I get this track, and I hear some guy mumbling, going, I said, son, grab your things, take your bags, come and take it, boom, boom, boom. I was like, oh, sounds like fucking Lou Reed, but it's a Peter Gabriel song. So I called Bob, and I go, hey, Bob, I go, is this like Lou Reed? He goes, yeah, I'm working on Lou's new record with Peter. I'm doing Peter's back-to-back thing. And I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, you know, I'm like the biggest Peter Gabriel freak, and I love Lou Reed too. He goes, yeah, that's the song. Go do it. So that's how I got introduced to Bob. And then me and Bob started working a lot. And then one day Bob said to me, he said, I want you to work on these Alice Cooper songs with me. Right. And I was like, okay. And he said, can you play guitar? I was like, yeah, I can play guitar. I can play bass. I can program. I can play keyboards. I can sing. I can do whatever you want, you know? And he was like, cool. So we start working on songs. And then Alice came to the studio one day, and he just said to Bob, he said, who did that? And Bob's like, Tommy did. Who's singing? That's Tommy. And Alice looked at me. He's like, you want to be in a band? And I started laughing. I was like, because we just started getting on a roll, Bob and myself.
Right.
I was working for Bob, and it was going great. And then, excuse me. I said to Alice.
So when you're doing this stuff with Bob Ezrin, are you in Nashville or are you back in Los Angeles?
We're in Nashville at the time.
Nashville, okay.
And Bob, he's very... he's very demanding, Bob, you know, like in a good way, you know, and he's one of those guys that, you know, when I was a kid, I'm always reading the records and the credits, and I'd always see Bob's name on all my favorite records. And I'd be like, imagine working with this guy one day. And it's really cool. It actually happened. And me and Bob are like best friends to this day still. So, but Bob introduced me to Alice, and Alice asked me to join the band. And then I said, can I think about it? He's like, yeah, take all the time you want. So, and I was sitting in Nashville for like 3 years now. And then I called him up one day. I said, hey, Coop, I go, we're going to work on this new record, this Alice Cooper Welcome to My Nightmare. And he's like, yeah, I'm really excited about it, blah, blah, blah. So we finished the record. And then he's like, so do you want to be in the band? And I was like, yeah, I'll try it out. I'll check it out. And I've never left ever since. And that was in 2011. So, no, 2009, sorry. When I started working with Coop, when I moved to Nashville in 2010. So then what happened was we were playing a Cooper show in London at the 100 Club. And Alice says, hey, I'm going to do this movie with Tim Burton and Johnny Depp. And Johnny Depp, you know, he plays guitar. I was like, yeah, I know. He's like, he wants to come down and jam with us. I was like, oh, that'd be fucking great, man. So Depp comes down and he shows up with his kids. And right away, as soon as I met him, I was like going, you know, when you could tell Manfred that you're going to be friends with this person. Like sometimes you go, this is working or this isn't working. You know,
right
away, right. I just felt this connection with Johnny and I was like, oh, cool. And I was like, you know, I wasn't like one of those guys, hey, Johnny. I was like, just cool. So we're in the dressing room, we're hanging out, we're going over songs and we're just talking music. We have a lot of stuff in common, the same stuff we like, but he's like, he's on some other level shit. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, whoa, I didn't even know about that. And so we're playing. And then after the show, he said, hey, man, he's like, here's my number. He's like, let's get together if you're ever in L.A. And I was like, OK. So I moved back to L.A. like after the Alice Cooper tour. And I was back like, because Nashville wasn't for me. It was like one of those things where it was how do I say that? You know, there's this being a New Yorker, being called a Yankee, asking me if I go to church, asking me what. Sex, you know, I'm like, oh, are you people fucking kidding me, man? You know, but anyway, I had to get out of there because I was like, going, this ain't my scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was in LA, and then Bob calls me up. He says, "We're gonna do a Hollywood vampire record," and I was like, "What's this?" He goes, "We're gonna put a super group together, and you're gonna be the guy. You're gonna do everything, and we're gonna have Johnny Depp and you do the songs, me and Alice." And I was like, okay, so that's how the vampire started. And then Joe came in when we were recording stuff. And then Joe was one of the, it was like Joe Perry. As soon as Joe Perry walked in, he's one of my idols, you know? And yeah. I see this guy, I'm like, oh, holy shit, it's Joe Perry, man. And then Robbie Krieger. But with Joe, right away, you could just tell, you go, he's in the band, man. It was like, you could just tell. It was like one of those things where you're like, he's in. And Johnny looked at me, he's like, what do you think of having Joe playing guitar? I was like, dude, you kidding me? It's Joe Perry. And it's really weird the way it all happened because it just happened organically. It wasn't like, and it was like, oh, we'll get these guys to play. We'll do this. We'll be the drinking club, you know, what Alice had back in the day with guys. And then we did that record. And after that record, we toured. We played the Grammys, which was another one of those things where you go, I can't believe I'm playing the Grammys. I never thought it would ever happen. You know, Johnny Depp, Joe Perry, Paul McCartney. I mean, the list goes on. Dave Grohl. I'm like sitting there going, this is ridiculous. You know?
So that explains, you know, the connection there with Depp and everything. So this project here, the 18, had you worked with Jeff Beck before?
Yeah.
Or was it?
I'll tell you. So when we started the next Vampire record, the first one was like mostly covers and Bob and Alice and JD and those guys that wanted to do covers. And we had like a couple originals. So the next record we did, we were sitting around and we were like going, we should write our own songs, man. We'll throw a couple covers, but do our own songs. So what happened was we're sitting around writing. It's Joe, Johnny, and myself. And Alice always comes in like, you know, he's like, he'll come in last when we have stuff. We, you know, instead of having him sitting around, we'll come up with stuff and then we'll bring him in when we have something to listen to. So we're sitting around and this is like 2017, 18 of April. And so we're just like making demos. You know what I mean? We weren't even making a record. We were just making the demos. We're writing songs.
Yeah.
Just having a great time. And so Johnny's like, you know what? Let's get Jeff to come down and play on a song. So we had this song called Welcome to Bushwhackers. And Jeff walked in and it was like one of those things. I was like, oh my God, dude, Jeff and Johnny, they're getting along. This is going to be one of those other things. Now we're going to have five guitar players in the band, but it's Jeff Beck. So you only need one guitar player with Jeff, you know, and Joe, you know, the other thing. And we were working on songs with Joe and Johnny. And then Jeff came in, he put a solo down. And then we're like, oh, cool, man, this is great. And then we're just writing songs. And Joe's an animal in the studio, Manfred. He's always writing. And he's like, he comes up with like these old Aerosmith riffs. And he's just sitting there. And I remember, like, I'd work with Joe at like, Joe would come in at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And me and him would work till like 4 o'clock in the morning. And then Johnny would come in at four, like maybe five in the morning. And I'd work with Johnny till like 11 o'clock. So I was only sleeping like 3 hours a day. And with Johnny, he gave me his diary of his journals of all of his thoughts and stories and things that he's been through. And he trusted me with all this stuff. He's like, can you write songs with this stuff? And as soon as I opened it up, I was like, dude, this is a treasure, man. I was like, we got so much great stuff in here. I was like, what do you want? Like some of the stuff, are you sure? Are you okay with it? He's like, pick out whatever you want and I'll let you know. So I would just write, I'd take a pen and I'd write the, like if I saw something like a good title or a good, you know, like an idea, I'd be like, oh, Mr. Spider, that's cool. I want mine now. And I'd just be writing these things down. And so one night, and this is when he was going through a lot of stuff, you know what I mean? Like personal stuff. And me and him would be sitting up there and we'd be talking all the time. And one night I said to him, I said, dude, I got this song. I've had it since like 2014. I just have these basic chords. I think it was like D, A, B minor, G, you know, like so many songs written over that. And I said, here's the title. It's called I Don't Believe in Humans Anymore. And he's like, whoa, that's heavy, brother. And I went, I was like, I think you should do this. And he's like, I don't think I could, man. He's like, I don't know about that. So I was like, all right, well, here's the chords. I go, here's the melody. Play around it, man. Whenever you feel like you think you might have something, I think there's something, it's something with the song. So anyway.
So that turns into, this is a song from Miss Hedy Lamarr.
Yes. So I had that
that's
idea.
It's our coolest song.
Yeah. I had that idea. I give it to JD. JD then calls me like, and we're each other every night. So he calls me at one day. I'm like, oh, cool. No one's around. I can get to sleep early tonight. And then the phone rings at 4 a.m. And Johnny's like, brother. And this is like 3.5 weeks later. He's like, I got it. I was like, got what? He's like, the song. I was like, what song are you talking about? We got like 30 of them. He's like, the human song. He's like, but it's not called Humans anymore. I'm coming over. And I was like, all right. So I get up and I'm always like anytime he calls, I'm like, let's do it. I turn the rig back on. I fire everything up. He hands me the sheet and I see it's the song from Miss Hedy Lamarr. So I look at him, I go, Hedy Lamarr? I go, dude, what are you talking about? He goes, come on, you don't know the story? I said, yeah, I know Hedy Lamarr, the Bluetooth fucking, you know, and, you know, the whole story about how she got ripped off and blah, 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 and whatever. And I go, where are we going with this? He goes, just shut up and read it. So I start reading it, man. And I go, this song is Hedy Lamarr. And stop. I was like going, all right. I go, so looks good on paper. I go, what's it sound like? So I was like, let me hear you do the verse, man. You know? So he started singing it. And I went, it's a lot of words, dude. I was like, it's a lot of words. He's like, no, man, we got to tell the story. I was like, all right. And I think that he felt really connected with the Hedy Lamarr story. You know what I mean? And he was really deeply inspired by the whole story with Hedy Lamarr. And because it was one of those things, like after he started singing it, and I was like going, he's like, Hedy Lamarr, dude, you know, she's the one who doesn't believe in humans anymore. And I was like, whoa, dude. And it all of a sudden clicked in and I went, that's pretty deep, man. And it was one thing. I got to tell you, Manfred, he did it like the take. I think it was like maybe 3 takes and I just put it together. It was that fast. And then I was like, let me put the song together. And then all of a sudden I got with my buddy Glenn Sobel plays drums on it. This guy, Jamie Holbrack. I'm just giving you keyboards. And then this kid, Jeremy Robolino, he did all the orchestration and Robert Stevenson, the guy who works with Johnny and Jeff a lot, he did a lot of stuff on it too. And, you know, Johnny was playing the acoustic. I played the bass and then he was singing it. And I was like, it would be cool if we had an intro that was very David Bowie-esque. You know what I mean? Like something like that. Yeah. I'll do like a tremolo guitar. And then all of a sudden Johnny looks at me and goes, what do you want to do with the song? I was like, well, what do you want to do with? This is your song, man.
Right.
I was like, you want to put it on the Vampire record? And he's like, no, we got so much stuff and I don't want to do that with this. This is a different song. He's like, let's sit on it. And this is 2018. So
okay.
Next thing I know, He's like, let's get Jeff to put a solo on it. I was like, oh, cool. So I sent it to Jeff. He puts a solo on it. And I'm like going, now I took it to another level. And the song sat around for, I think, like 3 years or something like that. And then I get a call one day out of the blue. Johnny's like, hey, man, can you send me the session to Hetty? I was like, why? He goes, we're going to do it, me and Jeff. And I think Roberts like mixed it and stuff like that. And he redid it. And it was one of those things. It's crazy how that song came about, because it was just one of those things where I didn't think it was good. I think it was just going to sit around and do nothing. I didn't think it was going to do anything, you know?
Right. Well, about Beck now. So like working with Beck, and you know, you're acting as a producer. Was there ever a moment where you would say or think, yeah, you know, that sounds pretty cool, Jeff. That tape was pretty cool, but I think you got a better one in you.
Never. I've never done that with Joe Perry or Jeff Beck. I've never edited Joe Perry or Jeff Beck, because with the Vampires, with Joe, I kept on telling him, Joe, we're not making an Aerosmith record. We're making a record that's going to be raw and out of tune and out of time. And I want you to do these solos in one take. And he did all of them. Like, he would get mad at me, Joe, because he'd be like, I could do it better. I was like, no way, dude. You got it. I'm telling you, Joe, just let it go. Just go with it, man. And with Beck, the same thing. Like, I wasn't even there with Beck recording. I just sent the track. I'm not going to sit there and tell Jeff Beck how to play guitar or Joe Perry. I'm like going, you guys, do your thing. You don't got to. That's the thing, man. You never have to micromanage these guys. You just go, here's the song, and you let them do their magic, because that's why they are fucking legends. Because you don't need to tell them. I'm not going to tell those guys what to do. You know, they already know what to do. They've been doing this shit longer than me. I'm going to sit there and go, well, you got one better in you. Like, I'd be like, some kid telling me that and be like, really? Come on, man. You know?
So the album, you know, there's this, the tune that we were just talking about. Yeah, this is a song from Miss Hedy Lamarr that you and the Depp are responsible for. And there's another track on there. What is it? Sad Motherfucker Parade. Is that right? So that's
he's Depp had that.
And Beck, but now the rest of the tunes on there are covers.
Yep.
So who, I mean, was Depp bringing some of these song ideas to cover? Was Beck doing that yourself? How did you come up with the list of songs that you decided to tackle?
Honestly, I had nothing to do with any of that stuff. That was Jeff and Johnny and Robert.
Okay.
You know, that's the, you know, the only thing I was part of was like the Hedy Lamarr thing. And then Johnny would just send me stuff and say, what'd you think? And I'd be like, dude, man, you're singing great. I mean, the other thing with Johnny to get him to sing, that's another story when we did Heroes, you know, for the record, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, cause he was like, cause I said to him one day, we're sitting down. I go, all right, I'm a Johnny Depp fan. I saw you play guitar in the last Vampire tour. You got to sing, dude. I don't want to see you play. I saw it already. I was like, you got to sing. He's like, I can't do that, brother. I was like, yes, you can. So I sat with him for about 5 weeks. Every night we'd be working on songs and I'd get him to sing. And he'd sing in the shower, like in this dark shower by himself. And the first time he sang Manfred, I was like going, I stopped right away. I went, dude, you got the tone. It's not about how good you sing. It's about how good can you sell a song. And he's got the tone where he had this Bowie thing, this Tom Petty, this Lennon thing. And I was like going, dude, I was like, you got to like really hone in on that. And then I said to him, I was like, if we did any cover songs, which cover song would you like to do? And this is how we got him into singing. He's like, I'll do Jim Carroll, People Who Died. I was like, come on, dude, that's not really singing. That's like more like rapping. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was like, let's tackle something that will be really good. You know what I mean? For people that I said, what's one of your favorite songs? And he looked at me and goes, Heroes. I go, let's do that. He's like, I can't do that. I was like, yes, you can, man. So that's how we got him to sing. I sat there and I was like, Heroes, man, you could do it. And he did it. And it's pretty amazing that Heroes then led to Hedy Lamarr. And then it led to all of these other things. And then with Jeff, it all led up to that other point, which it's pretty amazing that. Because when I saw him live, first thing I said to Johnny, I was like, dude, you have become such a great singer. You know, it's like, and to play with Jeff and sing with Jeff, it's a hard gig because you got nothing to hide behind. It's all one guy play. There's dynamics. There's nothing going on. There's no, you know, smoke. There's no, like, you know, fire. There's nothing. It's like, it's there for people to hear you. And I told him, I was like, it's the best exercise for you. Playing with Jeff has been nothing but amazing for him, you know, and being around.
Now, this is interesting. You're talking about him, you know, being a vocalist.
Yeah.
But they're like a couple of Beach Boys songs that are on the album. Don't yeah. Talk, Put Your Head on My Shoulder, and Carol, I Know. Yeah. And of course, the Beach Boys, it's all about this, the vocal harmonies and yeah. voices, but those are both instrumentals. So why the decision to go to make these vocal heavy songs instrumentals?
That would probably be a Jeff and Johnny question.
Yeah.
Because like I said, you know, I wasn't around for that. That would be a Robert Stevenson question too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there are a couple of 60s R&B things on there.
Yeah.
You're talking about Depp singing and stuff. I mean, Miracles, Ooh Baby Baby.
Yes.
You know, that's one to tackle there. Wow.
When he played that for me, I didn't know. He said, check this out. And I was like, what is this? He goes, I go, who's singing that? He goes, me. I looked at him and I hugged him. I said, motherfucker, dude. I go, look, look at you, bro. Look at you. You're a singer.
Very cool. Well, you know, the song we need to go out on is their version, the Beck Depp version of the Velvet Underground's Venus and Furs. You know, you mentioned working with Lou Reed. Lou Reed wrote it, the original off the Velvet Underground and Nico album. What do you recall about recording that one?
Same thing. I didn't record that one. That was Robert Stevenson, Jeff and Johnny. But that is a great song. And that is one of my favorite songs on the record, actually, which is really cool.
Well, yeah. And so did you ever, just talking once more about Lou Reed. So you worked on that song. So did you with Reed, did you ever hang out with Lou or play with Lou or?
No, that's another funny story. So when I got the track, Bob said to me, Tommy, you know, Lou doesn't want anything that's like a drum. You got to make stuff. So I was like, well, like, so if I did like sandpaper for a hi-hat and I took a hammer and mic'd that up and hit a wall, I go, is that cool? And Bob's like, that's perfect for Lou. And then I put it through a Marshall. So I did all these things and Lou doesn't do nothing in time. So it took me just to put like these things that I would call not drums, but like a hammer, sandpaper, and like I forgot what else, like a bag. I was doing like this other stuff. And it took me like, man, for like about 3 weeks just to put a pad to the song because it was going all over. And me and Bob were in the car one day and Bob sent it to Lou. And Bob's got him on speakerphone in the car. He's like, all right, Lou, what do you think of the track? And let's forget this. Lou goes, I hate it, Bob. And Bob looks at me. And Bob just goes, and Bob looks at me and he whispers to me, he goes, he's always cranky. He'll love it. Days. I go, I don't get offended by that stuff, man, because it's like, you know, it's a little Reed. I was like, I'll do whatever he wants to, as long as it takes, I'll do it. You know what I mean? As long as I'm going in the right direction. So Bob's like, what don't you like? He's like, I'll let you know. I hate it. And he hung up. And then I think it was like a couple days later, or like a week later, Bob said, he's like, he was just not in a good mood. He's like, but he likes it now. So, and then something happened with the Peter Gabriel thing. I don't know. That was a Bob thing. So that was his call. I didn't know whatever happened with the track, but I still have the track and it's pretty amazing, dude.
Man, well, one day I'm going to fly to Zurich. We're going to hang out and we're going to listen to that.
I would love that. Or
yeah,
if I'm coming to New York, you know what I mean? We could listen to it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm actually in Los Angeles. I'm in L.A.
I'll be in L.A. So when I get to L.A., dude, I got to get your number and all your info and stuff like that, because I'd love to have you come by the studio so you could see everything where we did it at Johnny's place, you know?
I want to see the magic. I want to see the fairy dust.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah. Well, Tommy, man, thank you so much for hanging out with me here, chatting with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you guys.
So as promised, here's Venus and Furs as performed by Jeff Beck and Johnny Depp from their album 18 here in Little Stevens Underground Garage.
That was a bit of Venus and Furs from Jeff Beck and Johnny Depp off the album 18 here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to producer and musician Tommy Hendrickson for speaking with me today. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. The legendary Van Morrison will have a new album out in March this year called Moving on Skiffle. Typically, he does not do very many interviews, so we are greatly honored that he'll be joining me for our next Coolest Conversations to talk about this upcoming release. That's right, it's Van Morrison on your next Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Betty, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.